Today is March 25th, 1994. This is Margaret Van Cleve. I will be interviewing Patricia Rogge, lifelong Fairbanks and a member of the Pioneer Herring family. This tape is made possible by a grant from Igloo No. 4 Foundation, Pioneers of Alaska. We are recording in the Rogge home in downtown Fairbanks. Well, everyone I've interviewed has fond memories of growing up in Fairbanks, especially during the teens in the 1920s. To describe your childhood of that era, let's start with your family. When did your parents come to Fairbanks? What is their background?
My father, Ed Herring, was born in Kansas in 1874. He moved with his family to California and then to Seattle, Washington, where he went to high school. My mother, Agnes Potts, was born in Ireland, Ballybay County, and she and Dad were married in 1896. She took a little business course and worked in a grocery general store, Louch Augustine, in Seattle. Interesting enough, a couple of years ago, when I was in the Circle area, I picked up a gas can that still had the printing of Louch Augustine on it after all those years. In 1898, my dad got the Klondike fever, and he took the boat to Skagway and then went over the White Pass by foot and part by mule or horse. Then in 1899, he went back to Seattle and picked up my mother, Agnes, and the son, George. Mother wrote a little account of that trip, which I think is very interesting. This is in her own words. On July 26, 1899, my husband, who had been in Dawson for 16 months, returned to Seattle to take me and our baby boy George to Dawson. We left on the mail boat Rosalie. It took us 8 days to reach Skagway. We stayed there 2 nights, waiting for the train to take us to Lake Bennett, where each one was searched for what they might be taking into Dawson. We stayed at Bennett several days, waiting for a boat from Canyon, which is just above Whitehorse. At the hotel in Bennett, we had half a room, the original room having been divided by a partition that gave each side part of a window, 2 panes of glass for us and 2 for our neighbors. The accommodations were not comfortable for us or the baby, but we made the best of it. When the boat arrived, we went aboard and did not leave for a few days. Arriving at Canyon, we had to wait several more days for a crowd to come from Whitehorse. We slept on the floor of the dining room. I still remember a breakfast of ham and eggs there at $2.50 per plate. We had time to visit Miles Canyon. The mosquitoes were terrible. It made no difference what time a boat came in. We had to be ready to leave on a moment's notice. We finally traveled on to Whitehorse, making the trip around the canyon and rapids with a freighter and 2-horse team. At this time, there were no homes in Whitehorse, only tents. We boarded the Nora, and while freight was being loaded, we had a chance to view the Whitehorse Rapids, which were both beautiful and dangerous. On our boat trip to Dawson, we saw the 30-mile River, Five Fingers Rapids, and many beautiful scenes along the way. After arriving at Dawson, we went directly to Dominion Creek and lived there for 7 years, moving to Fairbanks in 1906, where we have made our home since then.
Oh, that was a very nice account, but she didn't mention mosquitoes, I guess that was...
She did mention the mosquitoes.
She
talked about the mosquitoes being very bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think about that Miles Canyon incident is really interesting because now you can go to Whitehorse and they have made quite a place of Miles Canyon. And when you look, you can see where it was so narrow, the boat couldn't get through. So they had to unload the passengers and walk around before they boarded again.
Yeah, that's quite a change from the way she did it.
It was. When my folks came into Fairbanks then in 1906, the big fire had just occurred in Fairbanks in May at that time, and they arrived in July. So Fairbanks was really a bustling, bustling community trying to get everything built before winter. Dad obtained some property at 7th and Lacey, where Southall Manor is right now. The family lived in a tent until a one-room cabin was built a little while later. There were 11 children in our family, 7 boys and 4 girls. So my father had to work very hard to provide for that family. He worked at the post office and then in transportation, hauling wood in the laundry for a while. So you see, it was a very busy life.
Mm-hmm. Where was the post office located at that time?
The post office was on First Avenue.
So it was a separate building?
As you cross the bridge, the NC company was on one side of the big building, and then on the other end of it was the post office for many years until mm-hmm. a new one was built on Second Avenue.
So this home that he built is the family home that you grew up in?
It is. It seems like every time there were a couple of children, more children added, there was another
room
added. And it was a wonderful home. It was just a great big friendly home with a big living room, a great big kitchen where nobody took off their boots. They just came in and stood by the fire. And company was always welcome at the big table. And it was nice. It was made in kind of a circle, so as children we could run all the way around the house, which was, I'm sure, very difficult for my mother, but much fun for us.
I guess in those days you didn't turn on your faucet and get nice water like we get today.
No.
Did you have a well, or did Fred the waterman provide your water?
No, we did not have water in the house. I cannot imagine how my mother managed. She was a strong Irish woman, believe me, because she did lots of packing. We melted ice, we melted snow, and once in a while there was a place uptown where we could get it from the laundry, where they'd give us water for washing. So you see, it was difficult. In the summer, of course, we had rainwater. We had eaves from the roof into rain barrels. And the NC company ran water along the, just on the surface in the summer. My mother used to, what they call, broke it with lye, so we'd have water for washing. Then the drinking water came from Fred Muskert, mm-hmm. who was an old-timer with a walrus mustache, used to wear a big coonskin coat. His wagon was wood on the outside, and apparently a tank on the inside with a little stove in it, so the water wouldn't freeze. If you wanted one bucket, you put out a blue sign, and if you wanted two buckets, two at 10 cents each. So that was our water supply. When I was in high school, probably about 1928 or 29, we got water, well water. But up to that time, it was difficult.
So Fred provided cooking and drinking water then?
Yes.
Because at that price, a large family would certainly use a lot, so you used...
It was. It was really difficult. I don't see how my mother managed to do that.
Well, I guess with so many youngsters in the family, you all were in work teams, that you had your chores according to your age and
Everybody worked. We babysat, or we worked in the garden, or the boys all delivered papers, and that money just automatically went to the family, for the family use. Nobody kept their own money. It just went, and one brother delivered telegrams, so it was a working family.
A real enterprising lot.
Very, very much so.
What about the electricity? I know NC Power Plant furnished it. Did everybody in town have electricity for the most part, or was that?
Fairbanks really was quite an enterprising, or a town that was ahead, because the NC company did a wonderful job. They had the utilities, the light and electricity, they had the telephone, they had steam heat for a few, and then we had the water in the summer. So we were very, very dependent on the NC company. And they burned firewood. Their wood yard was where Barnett School is now. And there was even a line that went down from there, from that area to the power plant, and it was pulled by horses. But they could pull on the tracks to make it easier to get the wood in there. And as you can well imagine, the wood kept being cut further and further away from Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. And when we were young, we used to go in the fall and have a family picnic at the wood yard to get all the birch bark for the winter, because we also burned wood.
So the wood would be stockpiled, you say woodlot?
Stockpiled. There were many people cutting wood for Fairbanks, and it was just, the yard was just full of wood cut in lengths. For burning
for stove, for cooking,
for the NC company. Mm-hmm. And we also burned wood at home. We burned 17 cords of wood every winter, and that was hauled to us. My mother used to be very unhappy when she got wood that was burnt, as you can well imagine, to be black. And so it was pretty messy to handle in the house. Then later we burned coal.
When the railroad came in, probably.
Right, we had coal. And then later on, oil. in our house.
Yeah,
so.
Which we, most of us have now today.
Right.
Well, what about some of the memorable holidays? I guess that Christmas was an exciting time around your household.
It really was. We had a group. You have to remember that we didn't have any outside things. You know, we didn't even have trains or boats or anything in my early life, so it was kind of a self-sufficient affair. And Christmas was at home was spent with very meager, I don't say meager, but very practical gifts that my dad would put the Christmas lights up. I don't remember candles. I'm sure they had candles first, but then the Christmas lights. But of course, the electricity wasn't all laid right. So I can just see him with those lights all the way across the floor and children running all over. It was kind of a tough evening getting that Christmas tree decorated. Then we had our Christmas in the morning. We went to the church in the evening, and then in the next morning we had our Christmas gift exchange, not exchange, but we were given our gifts. But the school always had a school party with the usual exchange, and we loved it. We looked forward to days to that. And the Moose Lodge and the Eagles Lodge had Christmas parties for the families. We did a very little shopping uptown, but once a year my mother would take us all downtown to Smith's Gun Store or the NC Company to pick out a couple of things, money we had saved ourselves to give to the others. And that day was special because she took us over to the Model Cafe. We didn't get downtown often. We all went to the Model Cafe and had a cream puff, and that was as much a part of Christmas as anything else for us. And Thanksgiving was great too. I must say that we used to get boxes of oranges and apples because we were such a big family. The stores and other people used to send us fruit, and that was very nice at Christmas time.
This is a sort of a thank you gift for
They just liked us. Yeah. I mean, because we were so big, and I think they liked my mother, the family was so big, and they liked my mother and father.
And oranges were worth their weight in gold in those days.
So we didn't get as many ones, but lots of boxes of apples, and we thought that was wonderful. Then Thanksgiving, we had the turkey, and I'm sure the same ones maybe you remember, skinny old turkeys that were, my mother would hang from a stick or something, hang from a wire and then singe all the feathers off.
Feathers
it.
Off, oh yes.
And we would have Thanksgiving one year at our house and one year at my aunt's. My dad's brother, John Herring, lived in Fairbanks also. And they had one Thanksgiving dinner and then we would have it the next. Of course, no cars, we walked, and that home was way down on Wendell Street. So I just remember going down there with the moon and the stars, and it was such a beautiful evening to walk down for dinner.
You didn't care if it was 40 below.
No, it was often 40 below. It didn't matter a bit. Mm-hmm. Another day we celebrated that they don't so much now is the 21st of June. It was the longest day, and they had a parade, and the boys and girls who were born here had an organization called the Native Sons and Daughters. So they participated in the parade, and they had races and that type of thing. And then, of course, a ball game in the evenings.
Baseball.
Birthday. I just like they still do. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only thing that's remnant that's left of the occasion.
That goes back to the very beginning.
Way back to the very beginning.
And where would the baseball diamond?
Oh, this whole thing was all the parades and these things were at Weeks Field, where the library is now.
Mm-hmm.
And later it was a little airport. The airport, but now it's the library.
All big things took place there.
All big things, and of course the 4th of July was just grand. We had the, it was also took place at the ballpark, and we had races and contests, and there was bands and refreshments and baseball, and a little bit later the first auto races. We were the large family of Fairbanks, and the Miller family was the large family of Garden Island. It's across the bridge. We always called it Garden Island.
Mm-hmm. That's
where Samson's and the hospital is.
So
there was much competition between the Garden Island and the Fairbanks, between the Millers and the
Herrings. I was going to ask you if there was another large family. How many children did they have in their family?
I think comparable. Just a very large family. There are some still around. Bobby Miller is still in Fairbanks, and I think Cliff Bergman is a member of that early family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you remember a lot about the old school on 8th, the single school that Fairbanks had at that time?
I do. That school burned down in 1932. I always think when I look at the pictures of it, it was a typical little red schoolhouse. It was red and it wasn't very large. And when we first started to attend, it was not modern. They had the bathrooms, the lavatories were in the basement. And our brothers would come and help shovel the pathway and the haul the wood in for the janitor. That was part of the game. And the teachers stayed for a long time because they didn't come in and out by plane or even at first by rail, so it was hard to get in and out. So the teachers were there, it seemed to me, forever. So they knew everything about us, and it was great. My mother used to have all the teachers for lunch once a year, and that was the day that we all looked forward to. There were 17 in my graduating class in 1930. Some of them are still around Fairbanks. Charlotte Lynn Thomas and Edith Clawson Hall, and Lila Russ was a member. Bill Lavery was a member of the class. Jimmy Morgan, Marie Quirk Haggard, Pauline, Jimmy Stewart, Lois Spencer, Austin Gibbs, Bill Thompson. Those are some of my classmates. And some of the early teachers were Mrs. Kelly, who taught first grade, and I think every one of us had Mrs. Kelly in first grade. I can still smell the red ink on her desk. She called my mother and said that my younger sister was only 4 and a half, but she felt sorry for mother because she was so busy, so please send her on. She put her in first grade. And Mrs. Collins, Mary Adler, Mrs. Tupper, and Annabeth Rennie Hanlon were some of the early teachers. And you had mentioned when we were talking before Ben Eielson. I did not have Ben Eielson for a teacher, but my older brother did. And I think he taught either math or science. But he was courting one of the fifth grade teachers, and being in the younger class, we thought that was pretty exciting. So we were kind of in on everything that went on.
Well, I guess Ben Eielson only taught for a couple of years, and then he was into flying.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So I thought it was probably not likely that you had him, but figured your older brothers did.
Yes, I could have.
Probably got interested in airplanes through the class.
Probably. Probably.
As most young boys did in Fairbanks. But between school and work and doing work around the home and earning money, what did kids in your family do for recreation in the wintertime, for instance? Were there sports that you were especially involved in, like ice skating or hockey? Well, boys would be involved in hockey.
Right. Well, we really had a great time. You might think it was boring, but it was not, because we were completely dependent on each other and the weather and what we could provide. No radio, no TV, nothing at all like that. And we did lots of ice skating. I can remember skating one time from Fairbanks to the college. It was a good year, and the overflow was wonderful. And then they had a couple of skating rinks also. And in the summer we had picnics. We had one woman, Mrs. Bloom, who was an outdoor person, and she took us when we were little on picnics. We walked over to Grail, where, what can I say, where it is now, across where the Craftons, and in that area, all the way in there by the slough.
Mm-hmm.
So we walked all the way over there and back, and sometimes there was some old gentleman from Grail that would take us across in the boat, and that was really an exciting day. And we had an old-timer that made us skis, all the family. They weren't fancy, but he was a Norwegian, and he had us all with skis, and he also made stilts for us in the summer. We walked to the gravel pit out in the Lomita area. There were two big gravel pits up there, and we had wonderful swimming. We used to call one the boys and one the girls. And because we had such a big family and such a big yard, all the children came to our house, and we had baseball games on the side of the street, and had used to roast potatoes in the evenings, and they had big games of baseball, of course, and they run sheep run and games like that.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of swings. So we weren't ever bored. On Friday we got to go to the show, the theater, free. all the children in town.
Oh, how nice. This would be the Empress Theater.
Empress Theater.
That came in about 1927 or so.
I think it was there a long, long time when I was young. Mm-hmm. We used to walk down to the theater. I think it was the same location, but I'm not sure. I can't remember that, but we did go to the show free. And then, of course, the library was there. The George C. Thomas Library, the Episcopalians, I believe, ran that, and Mrs. Dunham was the librarian. The only thing I look back on, we weren't allowed to take 9 or 10 books. We were allowed to take 2 books, and we had to check them back in. And we read the Rover Boys and the Alger books and Pollyanna books, and so we spent lots of time there, too. We did some gardening, reluctantly. My dad was a very good gardener and, of course, had to have a garden to feed that big family. So we had to do a little bit of weeding. And we picked blueberries, loved doing that. My mother would put them up in a crock. I guess you know what a crock is.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of sugar in, because no refrigeration. And they didn't freeze them. I didn't think about freezing things, putting them out. They were put in the basement in that crock, and, of course, toward spring, they would get pretty strong, but she would use them for dessert all winter, make a shortcake, and then have the blueberries mm-hmm. on top of it. And so that I thought that was really great.
How far did you have to go to get blueberries? Were they growing down by the river? Or?
We didn't go that way. They probably were, but our patches were mainly up at Gaffney and Airport. Anywhere up along that way, we mm-hmm. got all the blueberries that we wanted. And as we got older in school, basketball was the main thing in Fairbanks, Alaska. We thought it was wonderful. Everybody played basketball. And there was no hockey, no football, none of the other sports. It was just basketball. And they competed with the college team in Anchorage. And one time, they even had the Alaska tourney, and I think Petersburg won. And everybody in town went to those games. I could just see the mothers sitting up in the balcony yelling for their sons. Some of the boys that played were Johnny Buttervich and Johnny O'Shea, and the Millers, and Austin Gibbs, Edson Moody, Don Herring. It was a really great time. And after the ball games, why, they'd always have a dance. The manager of the Empress Theater let the high school students used the ballroom up there. There was a very nice ballroom, and we played the phonograph, and they always had a little party after the...
Nice. Well, where would the basketball games be held?
In the gym. Later, to the old school, there was, I can't remember the date, but there was a big gym built on at the school.
The original school.
To the original school. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that went when it burned, too. But I can't remember the date that it was built.
Yeah.
But those games were just wonderful. I can just see
the whole town rallied behind.
Everybody went. That was the one thing to do Friday night.
You see in the paper today that William R. Wood said basketball unites the country. It's the one American sport that has been around for a long, long time.
Well, it was wonderful for us.
Certainly up here, too.
Great activity. Of course, dancers at the Empress Theater were high school, but then later on, we got older, we got to go to the town dances. And that was really quite a field day for all of us because so many men and young men came up to work in the summers. And so there were about 10, 15 boys to every girl. So that was really pretty nice for the girls. We had our heyday.
So you had the pick of the guys.
We really did.
Very nice ratio in your favor.
Right.
What about some of the historical events? We'll back up a little bit. I know everybody who can remember, from, I guess, age 5 years and up, heard President Harding speak in conjunction with the dedication of the Alaska Railroad. Do you remember that particular day?
I just do, because he came in 1923 when the railroad was completed, and he had the golden spike, which he hammered in Nenana. Then he came on into Fairbanks. There was in Fairbanks, and the town really celebrated. They had bunting all over and flags in every window, and there were speeches by some of the leading citizens. We were fortunate in our family because we lived next to the mayor, Mayor Markham. So President Harding and his party, were entertained with a garden party at Markham's, and believe me, we were hanging over the fence. And see, I wouldn't be so very old at that time. My younger sister was picked up. He came over the fence. He leaned over the fence and picked up Betty, and she had her picture taken with him. And we thought that was quite wonderful.
Pretty special.
Now I'm not sure, but anyway, that it was great for us.
Certainly, our first for Fairbanks
it
to
is
have
a
president come
indeed.
To town.
Uh-huh.
And I guess about that time, or shortly afterwards, the air flights were in and out of Weeks Field or in that general area. Ben Eielson and I guess later the Ween brothers. Do you remember some of the early flights?
I do. I think in my lifetime I was really very lucky, because up here we had transportation dog team, and then we had horses a little later, mm-hmm. and then we had the Fords, the early cars came in, and then the airplanes and the railroads. So I really got to cover them all in my lifetime.
That is remarkable. Yeah. To see how it has progressed to what it
right
is today.
Right in my life.
And of course transportation is a very important part of your family's livelihood.
And I do remember looking out the window and seeing the first planes come in, and I remember when Wilkins plane came here, and a little later on when Wiley Post and Will Rogers, and I remember the day that he was killed, how badly we all felt.
Well, I guess
they took off at Harding Lake, and my husband happened to be out there at the time. This was because of the small town. We just lived it all the bush pilots. We knew where they were going and what they did. It's part of our life.
And everybody knew them, and they were really the local heroes, I'm sure.
That's right.
You mentioned Harding Lake. This is something I was curious about. I know your family goes down there now. When did people first start going to Harding Lake for recreational purposes?
Mrs. Clegg, a judge's wife, was the first one to build a camp out there and have people come. And I'm going to hazard a guess, because she took us out at the time my dad died, and that was in 1927. So I would guess she must have had that camp 1925 or 1926. And she often took Fairbanks people out for a little day or two. Yeah. And then later on, I went out many times with the Clausen family until we finally got our own place in, I can't think of the year. I think maybe 1945 in there that we bought our own place.
Mm-hmm.
But we had gone out many, many times previously.
Yeah, still a very popular place. Well, I guess it was named in honor of President Harding, and
right.
had another name before that, Salchaka.
Salchaka.
Right.
Yeah,
so my history
Salchaka
comes
Drive.
Up.
Right.
That's right. And I suppose there were some, talking about famous events, what about some of the storekeepers in town? Were there some ones in particular that stand out? I know you talked about Northern Commercial store in general, but there are probably some clerks who are pretty special in the eyes of children.
Well, we had lots of leading citizens in Fairbanks. One of them was Jomer Nordale. The Nordale family had the Nordale Hotel. That was a hotel where Eva McGann lost her life. And E.B. Collins was a lawyer and also the mayor of Fairbanks and a legislator. And Ed Stroker was a banker in Fairbanks. And Bob Bartlett, who was later the senator, our senator, was with the News Miner and in mining. W.F. Thompson was a very colorful man. He was the editor of the paper. If you read 75 years ago and have a chuckle, that is W.F. Thompson's writing. In fact, I remember when I have the clipping of when my older brother was born, January 25th, the headline said, "Stork frees his tail on way to Herring House." And there was Tom Markham and Luther Hess and Dr. Bunnell, quite a few. Those were the leading citizens, but we also had a few town characters, too, that I look back on with fondness. There was one little fella that was black, heavy hair, and he was called Hatless Joe. Never in 50, 60 below weather did he ever wear a hat. And there was one man called Dog Sam, and he had a reddish beard. He was a gravedigger, but he did kind of look like a dog. The hair grew over his ears, so he's called Dog Sam. One man was Waterfront Brown, And he kind of looked like a Pinkerton detective. He dressed all up and had a hat on. And he met all the boats when they came in the summer. And he kind of had an idea as to the credits and debits of everybody in Fairbanks. He knew everything. Then there was a little fella called Tanglefoot Merton. And Tanglefoot sold the peanuts and popcorn and pop at the ball games. His voice, I will never forget. Just was so, he just could yell that out like an auctioneer. And they called him Tanglefoot because he often got tangled going up and down the bleachers. Then there was one man they called Dirty Face Porter. And he hauled wood, and his face was always black. There was one called these are really all in my lifetime. There was one fellow called Two-Step Louie, and Two-Step Louie liked to dance. So he would go to the dance hall and spend most of his money dancing with the girls. Then there was Sourdough Ellis, and that's the one that had the Sourdough Express that we later bought, that our family had. He had it in Dawson. And then there was a pirate shop, a little shop of odds and ends, and that was run by J.E. Ellis, and they called him the pirate. He ran this little shop. You could get anything from threads to pink peppermint candy to anything that you wanted. Then Burning Daylight was in Fairbanks, and though I don't remember him, my brother did. That was Elam Harnish, and he was Jack London's good friend, and there was a book written called Burning Daylight by Jack London.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so probably some of those characters, you didn't know them by any other name, but their nicknames.
No, we didn't. I would never know their real name. I guess maybe it's a part of a frontier.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds very much like Dawson. Of course, as you said, that when you were growing up, Fairbanks was less than 25 years old, so a lot of the frontier characteristics were certainly there.
They were, because you see, if Fairbanks was started in 1902, when I was born in 1914, it didn't have much of a start until I came.
Yeah, you mentioned your father purchased Sourdough Express. When did he get into that business?
That was in 1923, and he purchased the Express from Sourdough Ellis. And at that time, they ran drays with horses, and the first truck was just coming in. And I wouldn't say that my father did too well driving the truck, but somehow he managed. and they just hauled things around Fairbanks that had to be moved.
So I guess there wasn't much of a road system then.
There was very little road system. Actually, I recall going once with my dad in the truck to Richardson, and I had to sit on the back of the truck in case it backed down. They didn't have good enough brakes to hold it, so I could put blocks underneath the rear wheels going up Richardson Hill. Mm-hmm. So it was a very poor road system.
Yeah, probably not even a two-lane, a single lane?
Well, after fashion two-lane, but not really. Lots of grass growing on the sides.
In between.
Right.
In between the ruts.
Right.
Uh-huh. And your father continued that business until...
Yes, he did. He continued it until 1927, when he died of pneumonia. And my mother and brothers ran it until 1935. They did the best they could. The boys drove the trucks, and everybody knew us, and I think we did get along very well. My mother kept the books. And
I was going to say, she managed. Kept the books.
Yes, she did.
Now, where did the telephone work come into? She said, or you said that she was working for the telephone company about that
time.
Yeah,
well, after the mother and the brother sold the Sourdough in 1935 to my husband, Gene, and his brother, and then they branched out to the highway business, and my husband took the highway business and later sold the town business to Leo Slofeld. But then mother had to work, so she went to work nights. Can you imagine running a household with that many people and working nights? These people were awfully strong people. They really were. And she worked with Clara Rust and with Mrs. Weir, and Mrs. Brandt had just retired at that time. And I know you've heard before, but it is true that when you called the telephone office, particularly when Mrs. Brandt was there, if you wanted Dr. Sutherland, She would say, well, he's not home, but I think he's at the theater tonight. Or if he's not home, I think he's over to Mr. Collins for dinner. And that was just the way of life. As I said, it wasn't so good having my mother a telephone operator because she knew what I was doing or who was calling us.
That was as good as being home, if not better.
Right.
Keeping track of everybody.
Right. And then all the fires had to be reported in at the telephone office. They came in. And the fire system was kind of interesting. There were, the alarm went if there were, I lived on 7th and Lacey, so 7 Shorts would have been the fire alarm for our place. On the other side of Cushman, it was 1 Long and 7. So when the alarm went off, everybody went to the fire. Not only the fire people, everybody went. I don't know if the purpose was to help or if we were just curious. But to this day, I tell you, when the fire goes, I feel just like a fire horse. I just sort of want to go. I do really
sort of
want to go.
Automatic reaction.
Automatic reaction to go to that fire.
It's just pretty people are very concerned about a fire, and I know when the Nordale Hotel burned, we wanted to get in the car and go see, but then thought, no, we'd be in the way. But
that's the way it went. And of course, we had many, many spectacular fires because of the heavy firing, and also because it was no way to get the water there fast enough. 60 below weather, the hydrants weren't efficient like they are now. Mm-hmm. So we did have some disastrous fires in my life.
And I guess, too, a lot of the buildings were still made out of wood.
They were, and we
Especially the business section would, being one building after another, it would just be a domino effect.
One year, the telephone office burned, and that was kind of interesting because we didn't have any phone calls all winter, which was different. It was in the winter that it burned.
Oh, the fire of Christmas Eve, wasn't it? 1946.
Yeah. See, you're better on your dates than I am. I can't remember, but I do remember it was kind of a quiet
thing.
See, I was long married at that time, but it was a quiet winter. We didn't have any telephone calls all winter.
Yeah, so sometimes it's nice not to have that familiar ring interrupt your dinner or whatever.
It really was. That's really right.
So let's moving ahead a little bit after you graduated from high school. Now, you would have graduated from the school before it burned.
I graduated from high school before it burned in 1930. Yeah, was my year of graduation. Mm-hmm. So, and it burned, what did I tell you, in
1932.
So 2 years. I remember going to the fire. It happened in the middle of the night, and I remember we came down the street and saw the school on fire. And that was a quite an experience for all the children, my younger brothers and sisters, because they had school all over Fairbanks. They had classes in the Eagle Hall, and they had classes in the church, in different churches in town. They managed, they got books, and they got by during the year.
That wasn't far from where you lived.
We only lived a block from school, which we always find kind of disastrous because all the other children could bring their lunch or if you live far enough. A little later, no, I don't think I remember buses coming in my lifetime. They had a walk to school. And even people who lived, the children who lived down by the library, walked home for lunch. But some of them could bring their lunch, and we lived only a block away, so we were never allowed to.
Oh, so
that was a big difference.
You had to eat lunch at home.
Right. So that was I felt kind of deprived about that. I worked in high school. I worked at the Empress Theater in the evening, so that was great. We had a chance to earn money and go to school.
See,
I worked there many years ushering, and even when I went to college the first year or so, I worked in the theater.
So after you graduated from high school, then you went to the University of Alaska?
Yes, I went to college. The college was dedicated in 1922, and I do remember it was a landmark event, and classes started that fall. It was the college then, not the university. Mm-hmm. A couple of autos and even a couple of motorcycles joined together to go out to the college for the big dedication. We went on a gondola car on the railroad on the narrow gauge just to the foot of our big family, to the foot of College Hill. I just remember it. I can't tell you too much about it, but the ceremony included quite a few talks, and one by the local leaders, and Governor Bone of Alaska was one of the main talkers there. When I first started school, I went on the Brill car. The Brill car was a little railroad car that took off from the depot and went to the foot of the hill, College Hill, and then we walked up. The engineer, locomotive engineer, was Mr. Marsh. Now, I can't remember much else about that, and I'm not sure about what we paid. I think it was 25 cents a trip. Somehow, mm-hmm. 25 cents goes in my mind. I would say there were four trips daily, maybe just two going back and forth, or maybe four. I mm-hmm. just can't remember catching it at any different time, because you see, it was only, I think, 2 years that I went on a Brill car. Then Paul Grimen came in with his bus, and he saw the need there, and he even picked us up at our home. When Paul first started, he made a little route down Lacey and Cowles and on the streets, and we all were picked up to go to college. So that worked out well. It was cold walking to the Brill car. You see, we lived on 7th and Lacey,
that was
and
we quite
had
to
walk to the yes, and dark. I can remember going. We caught it at 7:30 in the morning. I remember going in the dark and the fog over there. But it was cold. It was
I suppose some of your professors went with you on the Brill car,
yes.
Like Lola Tilley. I think lived downtown, and
right. And Professor Rogue was on it, and Professor Southwick was on it. Some of them. We do a little studying, trying to do a little studying.
Show them how diligent you are.
right.
Was the Brill car a single car, sort of a steam-driven engine, or?
I don't remember how it was run. My husband could tell you, but I just really don't.
I often wondered about the name Brill, name, or why it was called that. But
I don't know that, too, but it was certainly the Brill car, but I don't know how.
And I guess in those days there weren't stairs going up the hill, you just walked up a little path.
Walked up a pathway.
Probably where the present physical plant is, sort of a gradual incline that would get to the main part of campus in those days.
Old Main, we called it, for the building that was there, Old Main, where most of our classes were held. And it was quite close to where Dr. Bunnell's house was, too. Of course, all the students worked, too, at that time. College was wonderful because many of the boys worked in the power plant and shovel snow, and Dr. Bunnell got them jobs anywhere to get them to go to school. I was fortunate because I had Dr. Bunnell in business law, in my business law class in school. He was so eager to have people go.
He was a real promoter.
He was a promoter, he was indeed. And it's a good thing he did, and it's wonderful for me that they had the college there, because I probably would not have been able to go. Mm-hmm. I worked half-time at what I call the FE Company, which you would call the U.S. Smelting Company, when it was first started, a big mining company that had come into Fairbanks. And I worked in the accounting office. Not the accounting office, I worked in the warehouse. My sister worked in the accounting office. I worked in the purchasing and warehouse half-day. People were very kind. They tried to accommodate so we could work. I can even remember Dr. Ryan letting me walk to college from Fairbanks on the tracks twice a week, one semester, so I could get a credit in PE, because there was no way that I could attend them and work. So people were just cared a lot of what
sure,
you
that's
did.
Well, we call that jogging now.
That's right.
And that's certainly a legitimate sport.
I jogged. When I think about those railroad ties, they weren't very good for walking.
Are there ever times that you stayed on campus, like say on a Friday night for a special party or dance?
I really don't think I did. I didn't get as much out of the social life at the college because I worked. It was too bad when I look back on it. If I could have, I would have liked to have stayed in the dorm. But we did have lots of dances and parties. At that time, they went by groups like the business group. I belonged to the business club. Business was what I took in college. So the business group had their dances. The miners had their dances. That was always supposedly a wild one. And the engineers had theirs. So those were the way the dances were run in that day.
By school.
That's right.
So big, but I guess the facilities having a large group, so you had to.
That's the way it worked. No, there were no need to. There just weren't a large group. just mm-hmm. us, you know. So, mm-hmm. And actually, I didn't take part too much in the sports and the theater or things that I might have had I been not working.
No, well, working and going to school is, you know, more than a full-time
job. Yeah, so sometimes I did both jobs. I worked at the FE company, and then I worked at the theater in the evening for a while. So it was busy.
I guess most students did work.
They just did. I think almost everybody worked. The girls, even like from Southeastern that came, worked in the dorms. Worked in the food in the dining room, served mm-hmm. food and things like that. Mm-hmm. Everybody worked.
Yeah.
Worked at the experimental farm, and as I said before, in the power plant, and janitor work on the paper. Just everybody seemed to have to work.
And there seemed to be enough jobs for everyone, too.
I think President Bunnell made them.
Or he created them.
Right. He had, when he lived in Fairbanks, he lived kitty corner from where we lived on 7th and Lacey. So I also was familiar with the family at that time, with his wife and his daughter, Jean, mm-hmm. were good friends.
Oh, and then it was later that the president's house was built, the little yellow house that's still in existence.
I hear that. I think it's used, is it used for a nursery?
Nursery school.
Yes, mm-hmm. I certainly do. It seemed to me that when we walked up the hill, we walked right by the president's house. It may have been moved since then, I don't know.
It's on the other side of campus, the north side.
Right.
So he was there to greet you,
or at least keep his eye on.
Keep his eye on you.
I think he really did. I think he kept his eye on almost everything that we did.
Mm-hmm. So I've heard. So, I guess like a lot of students, not only had him for classes, but knew him as a friend. That everybody has wonderful memories of him and some funny anecdotes about things that he did that they particularly remember.
Right. He had his eye on everything. And I think I was very fortunate to be able to take a business law course from him, because he had had the experience of being a lawyer and a judge. So.
So you graduated what year, 1935?
1935.
And that was about the time you met your husband, or?
Right. I had met him before, but I graduated in January. I went to school, actually college, 4.5 years, but I didn't get my degree until the spring. And then we were married in September of the same year, 1935. He was in the trucking business at that time. So I'd quit work, although I worked off and on through the years. I went back to the FE company at times and worked when they were busy, and I worked at the Northern Commercial Company as a bookkeeper in the accounting office. Not steady. I did this just at different times when I had my family, right, just at odd times. I worked mm-hmm. before I went into teaching.
So by the time World War II broke out, you had your children.
I had my children, right. I had three children, Judith, William, and Kathleen. And, of course, Ladfield and Eielson had been built at that time, and there was the influx of the military. When I look back at Fairbanks, you see, the way I judge it, we were just a small mining camp when we started out, and then later on the big mining companies came in. So that was certainly an awful boon to our growth and a complete change of our ways. Our social structure changed when these big mining companies came, because they had engineers come in and leaders who had nicer houses probably than we did, and I don't believe in social level status, but there was a little difference mm-hmm. there, very different than it was at first.
So losing the frontier.
Losing the frontier just a little bit there, but it was very nice. They were lovely people, and so that was a change for us. And then, of course, the railroad made a change. And then when World War II started, the military bought the big change. And, of course, the last change was the oil. Mm-hmm. But both Eielson and Ladfield were built, so there was a terrific influx. And this changed our life in such the pattern of our life. It was. We had blackouts. We were in a very, as you know, Fairbanks was in Alaska with a very strategic position. So we had blackouts, and there were block wardens to check your houses. I look back on it as being the dreariest nights to come home from work after work, there's not a light or not a peep of a light anywhere. It was really blacked out. And they had, some of the fellows were demolition men. They were all ready to go and blow up the bridges in case we were bombed at any time. So they were ready to do that, or bomb the power plant so they could put that out of commission. Everybody had an assignment to do. And it was really a difficult period. I had two brothers in World War II. In fact, I had one brother in World War I. My brother George was in the Navy in World War I. And then my brother Tom was in World War II. He was at LAD and then in Canada. And my another brother, Walter, was a lieutenant commander in the Navy, and he was killed by a Japanese kamikaze pilot at Okinawa. And they did name the Herring Auditorium, was named after my brother Walter.
Hmm.
Again, we were a small town and everybody cared about that.
Nice.
During the World War time, our letters were censored. I've had lots of letters where things were blacked out or cut out, mainly in the way of location, like if you were writing to Anchorage, or if I said I had driven the highway from Fairbanks to Anchorage, something like that, that would be have been blacked out. So most of the letters were censored, and travel was limited. It was difficult to get any place because, of course, there were so many so many soldiers there. There was such a large amount of men here. Our family business kind of escalated at that time because my husband was in trucking and, of course, very, very much in demand. They were as busy as they could be. At one time, I think that he and his friend were running 42 trucks out of Valdez. They were building the different bases and hauling oil. So it couldn't have been any busier than it was. He was gone a great deal of the time at that time.
So he wasn't home
very little of the time. Then I started teaching in 1958, and I taught for 16 years, and I enjoyed it very much. It was a time of my life. My children were gone.
So that was after your children were grown.
Pretty well grown, and I liked children. I went back to school and picked up some credits, and I had really a wonderful time of my life from 1958 to 1974 teaching. I taught primary.
Denali.
Denali, and there were many happy years. I enjoyed that. Then my husband retired in 1974, and I did too. So that was about the same time.
And that was about about 10 years later. You were king and queen regent for Golden Days.
Right. Yes, we were. Yeah. That was in 1985. That was our Golden Wedding anniversary year too.
So that was a special year.
That was right. So we had a good time representing Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked what you said in that article. I mentioned to you that I went to the library and looked it up, and what you said about Fairbanks. Maybe I can paraphrase it, and you can add to it that you sort of grew up with Fairbanks, and then you talked about how it's changed, and you certainly have a very deep feeling for Fairbanks.
I do. I never objected to change. You have to grow, and I certainly realize that. But I feel very grateful that I had a chance to be part of the early life. I don't want to go back. I don't think anybody ever says, "Don't you wish it were back then?" No, I really don't. But I think it was a wonderful feeling. It was great to have people so close together. We really were like one big family. Think of it. No planes, no boats, nothing. We were just here. And you were dependent on one another, and there was no crime. Everybody left their door open. There were no problems, and you helped one another. And no social status at all, because what could you get? You couldn't get things in here, like fancy things like you would want.
So you just had the necessities.
You had the necessities and did the best you could with them. Everybody had little gardens and did the best they could. Everybody had pansies and sweet peas and things like that. Nasturtiums growing in the summer. Houses were not fancy, but they were comfortable with their little heaters and things. They were cozy.
One thing I forgot to ask about was medical care at that time. Were there any problems with communicable diseases, for instance, in the school
No, I think we probably had, I didn't have chicken pox till I was married, so I'm sure that, nor measles either. So I guess we didn't have an awful lot because they just didn't get in.
Your isolated population.
Isolated population. We had two doctors here, Dr. Sutherland. Actually, he delivered all of the Herring family, and that was a lot. We said there were 11 children. A couple were born in Dawson, but all that were born here were delivered by Dr. Sutherland at home. The youngest one, mother went to the hospital to have it. All of us were at home. My older sister still cries because she said, I saw that doctor come in with a little black bag and go into the room and come out with a baby, and I thought that he got him out of the black bag. He said he did every time. I said, how could I ever believe it? But I think Dr. Sutherland was written up in the paper not too long ago, and he delivered all of us, and was certainly very kindly through the years. But I don't recall any communicable diseases excepting scarlet fever. When I was in high school, we had an epidemic of scarlet fever, and my brother happened to be one. Two in my family had it. We all had to move away from home. At that time, you had to move out of your house.
And they would put a quarantine
in the neighborhood, and they put a big quarantine sign, and I can still smell the stuff they sprayed before we came back in.
Worse than Lysol.
Right. It was worse than Lysol. And so that's the first time, other than measles, but that epidemic of scarlet fever was worrisome. Of course, the polio came in, and I can't remember the date on it, but
there was
a bad epidemic
in the early 50s.
It was in the 50s.
And it was everywhere.
That was right, and it was so disastrous in Fairbanks. We lost lots of friends, and it was very worrisome. I'm worrisome all over the United States, I'm sure.
Yeah, and by that time, there was more transportation in and out of Fairbanks.
Right.
Certainly planes were coming in.
Right.
And the highway, of course, was open to the public. So you really have seen Fairbanks from horse and buggy days to jet airplanes.
Right. I remember when the first cars came in, one of the neighbors had a Ford, and all of us sat on the fence just waiting and hoping and praying he'd take us around the block. It was Bill Hanley who had a sheet metal shop, and he did take us once in a while around the block for a ride.
Yeah, and we were sort of the hub of the world now with all the transportation available. And with our loss of isolation, I guess it's sort of a loss of innocence too, but
I think
20th century. And
I hate locking the doors, and I hate taking the key out of the car and all, but it's a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
You can't change it, can't
still a wonderful place to live, though.
I think so.
Yeah, there's no place
I think because we like the outdoors. We like Alaska. We like the cold. This is a challenge. We just thoroughly enjoy that. We are outdoor people. We walk a great deal, and we go to the lake, and we go out in the camper and hunt fish and many things like that.
And snowmobile, too?
Snowmobile, yes.
Oh, that sounds like you do it all.
My husband is 83, and he has two or three snowmobiles and is very good at running them, and I also have my own fun that way.
Well, that's the way to enjoy an Alaskan winter.
Yes.
Well, I've enjoyed talking to you and hearing about early Fairbanks and bringing it up to the Fairbanks we all know today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.